I did want to mention that we do have a prophecy study coming to Modesto for the first time on May the 18th. So I'm really looking forward to that and talking to people and getting everything set up. And we're going to begin sending out an invitation letter next week. So please pray about that, that God would stir people and move people, because it's important. I don't want to take that for granted. It's something I need to focus on much, much more. If you would go to Luke very quickly, and then I'll get into the sermon. Go to the book of Luke. It's a simple prayer, but I know I haven't really given it the time and attention that I should. I haven't purposely not prayed it, but I just realized I have to put a lot more effort into this. Verse 2 of Luke 10, "Then he said to them, 'The harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest.'" We need laborers. That could be just people who are supportive. They may not always become members. You know, back years ago when many of us came into the church, a lot of those people just either donations or support or co-workers. And I certainly would put some people out there in that category who send something to us regularly. It matters. It makes a difference. So please pray that God would send out laborers. I believe he's calling people. I think we live in an age where people are so consumed with life and stress and trials and the concerns of this world that quickly maybe put that off, you know, because I talk to some of these people. I think some of them are being called. But then life gets in the way. And we live in this crazy world where there are constant demands and things and pulls people constantly back into it. I mean, we all have to fight it. So I'll update you more about that. So please pray about that on May the 18th. Okay, now to the sermon today. Let's go to 2 Kings chapter 6. An odd story, but you have to remember, even when we take a look at these odd stories, they're there for a reason. God had a reason for doing this and giving time and attention to this. And I want to talk about this today. I'm going to be talking about Passover and small miracles. Passover and small miracles. And we're going to go to 2 Kings chapter 6. Truly, this is a time of the year when you see members go through trials, frustrations, clouds of discouragement. I know it sounds almost like a cliche that, well, it's a Passover, it's a trial, but it does seem that people are really hit heavily this time of the year. I mean, I get some sense of the congregation wherever people are, and the trials, the frustrations, the unwanted storms that all of a sudden enter into their lives at this time of the year, it is amazing. You do see definitely a surge in what people have to go through this time of the year. But the Passover season is supposed to be a very encouraging time of the year because I think it was Mr. Carlson saying in a recent sermon, I mean, the focus is not on us, it's on what Christ has done for us. And God does not want us to be overwhelmed with discouragement or guilt or condemnation. That is not his desire. We are to remember that Christ suffered terribly, that our sins are covered, that the mistakes certainly can be overlooked, so to speak. And those mistakes can be put behind us totally and completely in God's eyes. I always think of the Passover season as a time of new beginnings. Kind of I begin the year again and I take a look at my life and I recognize the mistakes or where I have fallen short or even the sins, but it's a positive time of the year because I can start again and God is very responsive to us when we start again, when we have that new flush of encouragement which we need during this time of the year to begin again. We never sin too much or make too many mistakes where God says, well, I've given up on you, or you're useless. If ever you enter that state of mind, that simply is not God's mind. Now, Satan wants us to have that type of mind where it's too late for me, or I've messed up too many times, or I can't believe I committed that sin. He does not think that way. He just doesn't. He is always there and responsive to the soft heart. Always. Doesn't matter what the sin is. He is that big. And you are that way with your children. You love your children and you're always willing to work with them. Always. You never let them go. So this is not just fluff. You know what I'm talking about today is not fluff. It's not charming little scriptures. These are practical lessons concerning this time of the year. But what you tend to see, and I think most of us have struggled with this at times, we get to the Passover season and that spiritual momentum can be lacking, it can be waning. Our spiritual drive can be desiccated or dried up because life just beats us up. It just wears us down. It is Satan's world. You know, I say that to people, and I said that to somebody recently, and they said, oh, I know. I said, no, you don't know. It is Satan's world. Little things, big things, family issues, pressure, trials at work, people you live next door to, it just pulls and pulls and it pulls people down. And you could see, I mean, if you could somehow plot it on a graph, the graph line would go down around this time of the year with God's people because they're tired. Satan has beaten them up pretty good over the year. So it's not a cliche. It's not just something we say every year, oh, Passover trials. It's very real for most people. Now, occasionally people have a Passover season and they're not in the midst of heaviness of heart or a trial. So how do you reestablish that momentum again? So I'm going to talk about that today. I'm really talking about momentum today, spiritual momentum. But the title of the message today is Passover and Small Miracles. Momentum is very important. You know, obviously, even in a human relationship, momentum is important. You have children, you try to maintain a relationship with your children, there's a momentum there. A teacher teaching a class, whether it be math, history, science, tries to maintain momentum within the classroom so you can get to the next subject or the next. In a business, businesses do that. There's a certain momentum, certain energy that has to be maintained. In romance, a man, when he's dating a woman, hopefully he's trying to maintain a certain degree of momentum within the romantic period of time, right? If he's phoning her two or three times a week and he gets together with her maybe on the weekends because he's working, that's good. But then if a couple of weeks go by and he hardly ever phones her and the best she gets is, well, I'm really sorry, I'm really busy, and a couple of weeks go by, the momentum begins to die. She notices that, right? I mean, I think we all understand what momentum is. So any business, momentum matters. Even when I do these prophecy studies in the past, I'll get this swell of interest. Then I kind of lose contact with the people. And so this time around, I'm really trying to maintain at least some contact, meeting them somewhere, letters, emails, even more phone calls. You know, how are you? I know you requested this. Did you get it? Do you have any questions? Because I want to maintain that momentum. And I don't always do a good job of that, but I want to do that, and I'm trying to work on that. Well, it's very much our relationship with God is momentum-oriented. But Satan's going to try to break that momentum, right? He's going to try to distract us with the cares of this life, or frustrations, or negativity, or somebody creating a stir or a problem in your life. It could be a neighbor. We got a situation where I live in this townhouse complex, and sure enough, a couple of neighbors aren't getting along. But they don't understand Satan's world. They're good people. Both of them are good people, but they're kind of at each other. They don't have to be at each other, but they don't know. They're ignorant of Satan. We aren't. So let's talk about momentum and where it begins. Momentum begins at a wonderful place. Small miracles. To see a resurgence in your spiritual life, energy, interest in Bible study, more intense prayers. And again, I'm not talking about dedication. You're very dedicated. There's no question there at all. I'm talking about the fact we live in this world that just, at times, just is a total energy drain on all of us. So how do we build up the momentum again? We start, and a wonderful way to start is requesting from God a small miracle. Because you know when something happens, and you know, even it may be a little thing, maybe in business, maybe a disagreement with a neighbor or a friend, and you get a little bit of a breakthrough or things improve, or in business, maybe something works out. It doesn't have to be big. By all means, let it be big, but you get a small breakthrough. It could be enormously encouraging. Now, I've had a couple of those things happen to me this week, only by the grace of God, but it was very encouraging. I did something stupid on Friday. I rushed through an amber light. You know yellow lights? I am one of these people, when I see a yellow light, it means hit the gas pedal and rush through. I'll be honest, I tend to do that. It's stupid, it's dangerous. Technically speaking, if there were an accident, I suppose technically speaking, I wouldn't be at fault. But sure enough, I try to get through this amber light, one of the lights on McHenry Avenue here, and I can see I'm going through that light, but the people who are now waiting for the green light, they start moving into the intersection. And I'm thinking, oh, good night. There's going to be an accident. I never should have done that. Just a quick prayer. Somehow, and I truly believe, and I'm not exaggerating, only by the grace of God there wasn't an accident. But I was stupid to do that, and I got to stop it. I don't do it all the time. But clearly, God was just gracious, clearly. Because that one car missed me by about that much. I don't even know how they missed me. But God is gracious even sometimes when we make mistakes, often when we do make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. So there's certain things like that I can learn lessons. And then something else happened. Somebody got into contact, a situation which was very helpful. There was something regarding the radio program and how we reach people and what to do, which I've been wrestling with, and shall we say, a certain degree of understanding came to my attention that just wasn't there before. Clearly, in my mind, that came from God. It may be a little thing, but it was an important little thing. So we're just talking about the little things today. Okay, let's get back to 2 Kings chapter 6. And here you have this kind of this strange story. Why is it there? It's a little thing. It wasn't a little thing to the man involved. Remember, momentum starts often with little things. So if your spiritual life is flat or you're down or you're really low, simply ask God with great conviction, God, please, I need to see your hand. I need a little miracle. Okay, this is not a fluffy sermon today. I give you scripture after scripture after scripture that backs up what I'm saying. God often works in little ways, and it helps to kickstart us maybe when we're just depleted. I'm not finding fault in anyone today. That's not what I mean at all. I know the world we live in, and I know the enemy who is against us. Chapter 6 and verse 1. The sons of the prophets said to Elisha, see now, the place where we dwell with you is too small for us. So there's some type of problem there. It was too small, and this is a difficult time. This is Elisha, not Elijah, Elisha, who followed Elijah. So whatever the stress was, just kind of read through that. But it was a problem for them at that time. Verse 2, please let us go to the Jordan and let every man take a beam from there and let us make there a place where we may dwell. So he answered and said, go. And the story, let's be frank, you know, people aren't interested in this. You've read this 100 times, probably never focused on it. It's back then with those crazy people who carried logs and did stuff and raised animals. You know, most of us don't raise animals, so they're not much of a connection. I don't know what it means, raising an animal. Corey, I got to see next time you slaughter something. You have to invite me over. But this was important, and there's a lesson here. And verse 3, then one said, please consent to go with your servant. He said, I will go. Kind of strange. And he went with them, and when they came to the Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one, an individual, I don't know the name of the man, I don't know his family background, but this individual was cutting down a tree, and the iron axe head fell into the water. And he cried out and he said, alas, master, for it was borrowed. Now, in our day and age, we borrow things, we forget to return things. It's not a big deal. Or we apologize, or we break something, and we say, look, give me a week or two and I'll replace it. Because we live in a very wealthy world. But back in that world, you lost an axe head, you could do servitude. You could become a slave. And axe heads were difficult to build. So, I mean, it seems kind of trite to us, but it wasn't a little thing to this man. You know, this is where you get the concept of a little miracle. I'll take the little miracles because to me, it can mean an awful lot. So he's stressed. This man is stressed. Probably had a family. What's going to happen? He loses the axe head, falls into the water, and he cries out, oh, master, for it was borrowed. So the man of God said, where did it fall? And he showed him the place. So then Elisha cuts off a stick, throws it over the area where it fell, and the axe head, which is heavy, made with iron, floats to the top. Now that's a little miracle. You and I don't pay attention to that. You've read this at least 100 times if you've been in the church 20 or 30 years. God puts it in there to teach us. It is a little thing, but it's a big little thing to this individual. We need those little miracles, those small miracles to take place, because it reminds us that God is there. What is most important about the subject today is when those small miracles take place, we get that affirmation, that sense of security that, yes, God is there. God does notice. And little things, if they're important to you, those little things are important to God. God traffics in detail. He does little things. He's not too big to do little things because he cares about us. It's very real, and you see it in these stories. So in verse 7 it says, "Therefore he said, pick it up for yourself, and he reached out his hand and took it." Incredible miracle, really, when you think about it, to see that piece of iron axe head float to the top. And I'm sure that circulated around and among the prophets. Even sometimes it's good to talk to other church members. You know what happened this week? I lost this and I found it. Or I had to pay a bill, I didn't have enough money, and then something happened and I had the money. Or this breakthrough occurred. Because these things do happen, and maybe we need to share these things with one another on a more regular basis. It matters a lot. I remember one time years ago I had a check. It was a sizable check. And I misplaced it. I lost it. This goes years ago. I was back in upstate New York. And I looked and looked hours looking for this thing. And it was one of those, I can't believe I lost this thing. Can't believe it. And then finally I prayed and I said, God, please. I have no clue. I've turned the room upside down. I cannot find it. And with about 5 or 10 minutes, my mind kind of went on to other things, still kind of thinking, where did I put it? And totally absent-mindedly, I go to a bookshelf, and I saw the title of a book that I wanted to remember to take with me to read. I'm always taking books with me. So I pull it out of the bookshelf, and I open it up, and there's the check in the book. Got 50 books in the bookshelf. The odds of me just going to the book where the check was, I don't know, 1 in 110,000. What had happened is I was interested in the book, I became absent-minded, and either I was talking with somebody or doing too many things at one time, got distracted, took the check without realizing it, just closed the book over the check, then took the book and stuck it in the shelf later on. Now, to you, that story means little. To me at the time, it sure meant a lot. And I know God, just only by the grace of God, opened my mind to see, you know, where that was. I'm sure you've had experiences many times like that. Little things, or a phone call that just at the right time lifted your spirits, or news or information or something that was lost that was found. God is there to encourage us, and he's very interested and everything. Let's go to Luke 12, Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. So when you're down, or the energy level is low, or you're flat, or you think maybe you've messed up, or maybe you don't think that, but you're just really flat. Nothing helps get that engine going, or you turn over the engine quicker than knowing that God's hand is involved, and it may be a little thing, but of course, when you're down or you're low, those little things can be such big things because you know it's God's hand. It's not just blind chance. It's not, oh, I guess this kind of happened. I know it sounds silly, and even in my foolishness yesterday, you know, going through that intersection and everything, I mean, God was just gracious to me. I just really believe that. Doesn't mean God approved of the way I was driving. He was just gracious to me, you know, because I was kind of numb for the next hour because I knew somehow I got through that intersection without accident. Okay, this is very important, Luke chapter 12. Again, this is not just a charming little scripture. It's not a quaint scripture. It's not a little kind of fluffy thing. You know, God isn't that way. He's not frivolous, and he's to be taken very, very serious, in a serious way. Let's go to verse 4, Luke chapter 12. And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that have no more that they can do. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who after he has killed has power to cast into hell. Yes, I say to you, fear him. And then he says something very interesting here. And he says, are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 copper coins? Very inexpensive. And not one of them is forgotten before God. And verse 7, but the very hairs on your head, very hairs on your head are numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. That's literal, it's practical, it's a way of telling us God is much more aware of what's going on in your life. All the little details, all the little cross currents, all the trials and tribulations, the ups and downs, he's very much aware. He loves you much more than you really understand. We talk about the love of God. We don't really understand that love at depth. Of course, the Passover, we're reminded of what Jesus Christ suffered. That love was so great, the terrible beating and scourging, and then his ultimate death and the willingness of the Father to give up what he loved most, his son. I mean, there's a whole story there of love. We learn, we grow in our understanding, but we're limited, we're human, and, you know, we don't really get it. We try to understand it more. So those little things do matter to him, and we should never be afraid of going to him regarding those little things. Let's go to Psalm 147. Psalm 147, again, a wonderful scripture, but I wonder if we really appreciate what is being said here. Psalm 147, and verse 3. Beautiful scripture. He heals the brokenhearted. He binds up their wounds. Whether somebody wounded you or Satan hurt you, or someone you loved hurt you, or maybe you even hurt yourself. We're human. Sometimes we do things that we hurt ourselves. God is well able to bind up those wounds and begin that healing process, literally, in the mind, in the inner man. And then verse 4, it says, he counts the number of stars, and he calls them all by name. Now, is that an exaggeration? I don't think it's an exaggeration. I think he knows every single one of those stars. He's got the capacity to do that. It's part of his creation to do that. He knows every single one of those stars. And he's trying to show you that he's very much aware, and he is very much aware of the details in your life. And he does heal the brokenhearted. He binds up the wounds. He's mighty in power, verse 5. His understanding is infinite. And the Lord lifts up the humble. So if we come to him with humility, regardless of whatever the sin may be or the mistakes that are made, if there's humility there, all will be made well. God will totally restore, not partially, totally restore. Because he loves his children, and this is so much a big part of the message of the Passover. So this is very important to understand. Help within that process of reigniting that energy, that spiritual energy, is to see those small miracles. That's why I bring it to your attention. Another fascinating little story here in John chapter 2. Let's go to John chapter 2. God's aware of the little things. He's big enough, but he'll attend to the little things. Just like, of course, you attend to the little things with your children. You know, they fall down, they get hurt. They lose something, a toy breaks, and they're 3 years old, and it's almost like their world has totally fallen apart. But you love them, you hug them, you embrace them. I mean, that love and tenderness is there. That never ends with him. John chapter 2, this is really fascinating what takes place here. Again, if you give some time and attention to it, you see the character of God in a real time setting. John chapter 2 and verse 1, Jesus Christ is really not known at this point. The great power, the authority, who he may possibly be. I mean, they don't even know that he's a prophet at this point. He's still a man who's unknown and unrecognized. And in John chapter 2, and verse 1, it says, on the third day there was a wedding in Cana. Weddings back then often would last for 7 days. It's almost like a Feast of Tabernacles kind of setting, where you would have celebration and friendship and wine and meal for 7 days. I do think in the millennium you're going to see weddings last 7 days. I don't think you're going to see 1 day in the afternoon. Let's get it out of the way. Let's go home. Just kidding. But we're a rush society. I really think in the millennium, because people will work hard, but they're not going to be super rushed as we are. I think you're going to see 7 day weddings. Anyway, he's at a wedding. Now, both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. So it's not as if he has done all these miracles for months and months. It's still very early on in his work that he was doing. And at this wedding, they ran out of wine, which could be a little bit embarrassing. I mean, you want your guests always to have enough food or wine. But it wasn't cataclysmic, you know. I mean, it wasn't the end of the world. I mean, they could have drank water, and I think people would have understood. So it wasn't, oh, this is horrible. But again, you know, your situation, the miracle may take place in a context in your world where it's not horrible, but God can still perform a miracle. God doesn't always wait until everything is just horrible. And they ran out of wine, verse 3, and the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. To me, this is funny. You know, you can smile when you read this. And Jesus said to her, and I'm sure he loved his mother, but here's mom kind of bossing her son a little bit. And moms have a right to boss her sons. Because she gave the son life. She took care of the son. She was there when he was sick. Moms have a right to boss their sons, right? You going to argue with me afterwards on that? I don't care if they're 35 years old, you can boss your sons. Now, of course, you don't want to overdo it. Be careful there, but moms have a right to boss. Yeah, been a little bit bossy there. That's okay. I have to think Jesus smiled a little bit internally, probably shaking his head, and he said to her, woman, you know, I'm not here to start performing miracles. And then he says to her, woman, what does your concern have to do with me? A little bit of a test there, maybe. I don't think he was frustrated, but he does make it clear. He says, my hour has not yet come. This is his mother. Now, his mother knows who he is up to a point, but I think even Mary still wrestled with the totality of who he was. She knew the miracle and the great calling, but I mean, how do you wrap your mind around that? This is the very Son of God. I mean, don't misunderstand. She understood a lot. But there's another passage or two where once he got into his ministry that the brothers of Jesus and Mary came to him, and you could see they didn't totally understand why he was doing what he was doing the way he was doing it. But you know what's interesting here? Even though his hour had not yet come, he made an exception. God is not so rigid he doesn't make exceptions. God makes exceptions. He's not a computer. He's not a drill instructor in the Marine Corps. He will make exceptions. And his mother, not even really hearing a comment, because she knew her son, this is funny, his mother said to the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. He's going to act. No discussion here. She assumes he's going to act. Very important point here, which I bet you missed. When you seek something from God, even a small miracle, you better expect an answer to it. Do what Mary did with Jesus Christ. She's no respecter of persons. You better expect it. Now, I'm not saying you never expect that. I believe you do. But I think sometimes again, we get so worn out and we begin to get lost in the weeds. Well, maybe it's not God's will, or maybe, I don't know, or... But certainly a small miracle God will do, will he not do it? We know he's capable of it. But then we have to grab a hold of it with willful force, and expect it. I mean, this is mom. She's telling her son, I expect something here. And it's a wonderful little story. And so in verse 6, it says, now there were set there 6 water pots of stone. Now, she didn't know exactly what he was going to do or how it was going to take place, but she knew it would take place. According to the manner of purification, water pots containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. And Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water. And they were filled to the brim. I mean, this was a big wedding feast. I mean, you've got gallons and gallons of wine being produced here. And he said to them, draw some out, some of the water out, and take it to the master of the feast. And they took it, and when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and did not know where it came from, I mean, he knew what was going on at his wedding feast, couldn't figure this out, and it was a wonderful little miracle. Little in the sense it was just physical. Yes, God will do little physical things as well. And the master of the feast called the bridegroom, and he said to him, every man at the beginning sets out the good wine when the guests have well drunk. Yeah, I mean, they're sober, and they'll appreciate good wine. Once they get drinking a bit, they're not as sober, so if you slip in a little bit of lesser quality wine, they won't know the difference. I mean, we're dealing with human beings here, right? But he says, boy, you've left the good wine until now. And of course, this man, he didn't know what to say. Little physical miracle, water to wine. Not overly embarrassing that you run out of wine. And God is simply there. He does little things because we ask, and he will make exceptions. And we can almost forget about that in the grind of life. Remember, he's a God who numbers the hairs on your head. He's the God who numbers the stars. And it's a wonderful thing. And he sees all these little wonderful things. And he will move, and all you have to do with conviction and with willful desire, focus on a small miracle. Let's go to Matthew chapter 21. This is very important for children to understand, because often children will understand those small miracles. Matthew chapter 21. And again, to us, these stories seem rather odd, but he's trying to teach us. In verse 17, he left them, went out of the city to Bethany, and he lodged there in Bethany. Now, verse 18, now in the morning, as he returned to the city, he was hungry. So he's hungry. And seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it, and found nothing on it but leaves. It should have been producing, but it wasn't producing. And he said to it, let no fruit grow on you ever again. Boy, that seems harsh. But this is God. He knows what he's doing. He can do whatever he wants. It's his fig tree. Okay, now fig tree doesn't have feelings. There will be people in this world who tell you fig trees have feelings. Mr. Carlson kills chickens by the tens of thousands. He didn't realize it, but they have feelings, but he's become so numb to that fact. Got to give him a hard time. But this is kind of the world we live in. But if Jesus Christ wants to curse a fig tree, so let it be. And immediately the fig tree withered away. Verse 20, and when the disciples saw it, they marveled. How did the fig tree wither away so soon? See, they didn't really understand who he was at this point. They had flecks of insight at times, but they had preconceived ideas, and they were just amazed. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, and they said, how did the fig tree wither away so soon? And Jesus answered, and he said to them, assuredly, I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree, but also, if you say to the mountain, be removed, and be cast into the sea, it will be done. And whatever things you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive. Those words are absolutely true. We wrestle as human beings because immediately the human mind wants to say, okay, but what about this and what about that? And yes, okay, can you fill in some more here? And I hope to do that in another sermon, because just the human mind just runs and starts doubting very quickly. I don't know why it is. It is. I think we can all understand. Something about the human mind, we just start doubting very quickly. We become anxious or fearful very quickly. We become negative very quickly. Is it the world we live in? Yes, I think it's part of it. I think we live in Satan's world. I don't think we were made that way, but the human mind becomes that way. And even in the church, and you're people of great faith, I don't doubt that, and great dedication, but we still struggle with that at times. That's a bit of a bigger subject, and so I'll talk about it later, but he is simply saying, in effect, one of the lessons here, which I will talk about very quickly here, and I know you believe this, but we have to be reminded of it and grab a hold of it more firmly, more often. God will be much more involved in our lives if we seek that out willfully, stubbornly. Yes, I said stubbornly, with determination, with great desire, with a humility, with a childlike humility. But children will often request things. Great humility, but they'll be incredibly persistent. Dad, you said you'd do this. Dad, you said you'd do this. Dad, remember you said you'd do this. That dynamic is so very, very important. It's very real for us today. So by all means, determine to have God perform a small miracle in your life this week or during the days of the Passover and unleavened bread. He will do that because he's a God of small miracles. That's how momentum is built. Let's go to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. So we're talking about momentum. We all have days or weeks or maybe a bad year or 6 months when momentum is real low. You know, that car's moving at 2 or 3 miles an hour. It's not that you don't love God or fear God and you do believe in the truth, but whatever reason, you know, you're depleted. And he understands that. He never leaves us or forsakes us. But this can help us to understand how momentum is built. Let's go to Luke chapter 16. Am I in the right place? Yes. This is interesting, and he would make these comments. This is, again, talked about in another passage, and I hope, God willing, I'll get into this during the days of unleavened bread, because I want to continue this theme during the days of unleavened bread. In verse 10 of Luke 16, he's talking about people and the way people deal with things, and he'll cover all these topics, and he's talking about the unjust steward, and I don't want to get into all of that. I just want to focus on verse 10, which is a great truth. He says, he who is faithful in what is little or least, he who is faithful in what is least will also be faithful in much. He who is unjust in what is least is unjust in much. There are other scriptures that give us this indication that if God gives us something little and we take a hold of it and we grab a hold of it and work with it, it will increase, it will grow. In effect, it's almost as if a momentum then is established and it begins. So momentum is very, very important. So the way to increase faith or reignite faith or to build momentum is simply to take something and start in a small way where you step out in faith in a small way. I mean, requesting a little thing is an act of faith. It may be a little act of faith, but it's an act of faith. It's little. And you may be so worn out and depleted, you even wonder if God will answer that request because you're so worn out or depleted. But in that experience, go to him anyway and start out small. God, my faith is small right now because I'm tired. I'm overwhelmed. I'm depleted. I'm anxious. But I do have faith. It's small, but strengthen that small faith. And he often will strengthen the small faith through showing us that he does act in those little ways, and we do see those small miracles, and you begin to rebuild that spiritual momentum again. This is why answers to small prayers or little prayers, it's very important. It's not a frivolous subject whatsoever. It's very, very important to be able to do that because it helps to establish that momentum, which is absolutely crucial. You know, over the years, you know, you talk with people. I apply to myself. You know, I've had people say, you know, it's been months since I've prayed. I said, I believe it's the truth. I know it's God's way of life. I just find it difficult to pray. I know I should be praying. And I'll usually talk with them. I don't condemn them. I mean, what purpose does that serve? They're down. They're depleted. God doesn't want me to condemn them. And I'll simply say, look, just make a commitment 5 minutes a day. 5 minutes a day. Just start a little bit. God will honor that. He'll see the effort because that begins the momentum. I don't say, what you do is tonight, no matter what, you pray for 1 hour, 1 hour straight. You know, they're so tired and depleted. And God will answer a five-minute prayer if there's humility and honesty. Or same with Bible study. I'll say, just make it a goal, 5 minutes every day. You can find 5 minutes every day. It begins the process. There's humility there. Tithing, I've told people, just give $10 a month. Maybe you haven't been tithing. I don't look and I don't ask them, but on occasion people have come to me. I know I should be tithing and I don't. And I'll just say, just start. Of course, I believe in tithing. Don't misunderstand. But if they're struggling and they're overwhelmed and they're tired and they're stressed and financial problems, burdens, do something. That next day, write a check for $10. It begins the process. Do you see what I'm saying? You begin the process. Heard a lecture on this subject, which I thought was really interesting, dealing with athletes at the highest levels. This is what some of the best trainers have found, that let's say they have a major injury and they think they're never going to be able to play tennis at a competitive level again, or they're never going to be able to run a marathon, or they're a world-class swimmer and they had rotator cuff surgery, you know, they're depressed, they're down, but they want to continue in their sport. And some of the best trainers in the world will just start them at the smallest level. Let's work. Let's begin right from the beginning. You know, we'll just train maybe 30 minutes a day. I'll be there. You don't have to all of a sudden enter into these marathon training sessions. Day at a time. One little step. One little step. And then they build up their momentum. And it's amazing what is accomplished. And sometimes they come out even better athletes after the injury than they were during the injury. But we get discouraged. Listening to somebody talk about Andre Agassi, I think some of you remember, he was a great tennis player. You know, got older and he stopped. But there was a time he went from number one in the world and then he went down to, I don't know, 152nd. And everybody wrote him off and he's, hey, you reached your prime, da-da-da. But he wanted to come back really down. But this is one of the things he did. He got a good coach and they just kind of started all over again. You don't have to be number one in the world within the next year. But he worked and worked at it. And I can't remember how long it took him, but I think within about 2 years or so, he became number one in the world again. Just there's a principle there. You start, no matter how low you feel, how depleted you are, you start with one step at a time. God will respond to faith if it's humble, just one little step. Sometimes you just get down on your knees and you pray, God, I need one small miracle. Help me. He's very kind, very considerate. You don't have to be super righteous to get a positive response. He loves people. If he sees your humility and you're trying, sometimes it's just one step at a time. And he's very, very responsive to that and very loving as well in terms of how he treats all of us. In that regard, sometimes God just strengthens us in the sense that he gives you internal strength. It may not be an open door, it may not be a better job, or it may not be a financial problem that is improved upon. And those are good things, and those are little things, but they're good things. Sometimes it's just the internal strength. One example of this, and then I'm going to conclude. Let's go to Acts chapter 18. Now, Paul was having to go to Corinth, a real tough city. Paul was not a coward, but it would almost be like you or me if we were thrust. Let's say you had to go to New York City, totally reestablish a new career, not anything you've done before, total new career. You just got to move there because in 6 weeks' time, you got to bring your whole family out to New York City. You know, New York City's a tough city, okay? And you got to make your way, okay? And you're thrust into this aggressive environment, and you don't know where you're going to work, and you don't know what's going to happen, and, you know, you're stressed. God understands all of this, and this is what the Apostle Paul faced when he was dealing with the Corinthian church. So he knows he's supposed to go to Corinth, but it's a tough, tough place. So in verse 8 of Acts chapter 18, then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all of his household, and many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. Now Paul's still afraid because he's been persecuted. He's been beaten up, put in prison. People have tried to kill him. He was not a weak man at the human level. But he's human, too. You know, he's afraid. And verse 9 says, now the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision by night. Do not be afraid, Paul. Speak up. Don't keep silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you in Corinth and hurt you, for I have many people in this city. And he did. And it was a difficult congregation to deal with, is where you see the 1st and 2nd Corinthians, but he was protected physically. And the point I'm trying to make here, that small miracle in this situation was simply God strengthened him internally. Sometimes we face storms and trials, and God just gives us that awareness, I'm going to strengthen you. I will help you through this. Don't be afraid. I'm with you. And sometimes that's the way you get through the storm. So it's not always a physical event that takes place. It can be. It may be an open door, or maybe somebody shows you favor. Those are all small miracles and good things. Sometimes it's just that internal strength, which is a wonderful attribute that God gives. I think sometimes in the church, maybe we focus a little bit too much on God answering prayer and he delivers us from a situation, a circumstance. That's good, but maybe we need to put more attention on the fact that God will strengthen us internally in the inner man. So a couple of thoughts just before we close. First of all, when you ask of God something, just expect it. Don't let doubt wear you down. Satan wants us to doubt and doubt and doubt. Let's go to Mark chapter 5, and I'll come to the conclusion. Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. I often think of this woman who went out on her own, expecting a miracle, didn't talk to anyone. From what we gather, didn't even pray to God. I don't even know if she prayed to God, which is interesting. She's been sick most of her life with this intensive bleeding, and she goes out in a crowd. She doesn't want to be known because if you were a woman and you were bleeding, you weren't supposed to be in a public setting. I mean, you didn't do those things. So in verse 25 of Mark 5, it says, and a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had, but the problem grew worse and worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she made the effort to come behind him in the crowd, and she touched his garment. For she said, now this was an act of expectation. When she said in her heart, these were not just passive words. It wasn't, well, maybe if I touch him. It wasn't a maybe if I touch him. It was determination. If I touch his garment, I'll be healed. For she said, verse 28, if only I can touch his clothes, I will be made well. And immediately when she touched the clothes of Jesus Christ, the fountain of her blood was dried up. And she felt in her body that she was healed of this plague, this affliction that had gone on for years. And Jesus immediately turns around, knowing that power had gone out of him, and he had no idea who touched him. This is how powerful faith, expectation is. And God the Father honored it. So expectation is important. Now, how God works out that small miracle, that I don't know. God will work out a small miracle in the way he chooses to work out a small miracle. It's a wonderful story because even Jesus Christ didn't know. It wasn't the faith of Jesus Christ in her, okay? It was her faith. I don't even see where she prays about it. I'm not dismissing prayer. I'm just saying, look at what this woman did. Expectation, very practical, touches the garment. And then he looks around and he said, who did this? And the woman came fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened, because she wasn't supposed to be out there bleeding like that. He could have corrected her. He obviously didn't. And the disciples even said, well, how do you even know? I mean, other people were touching him. They weren't healed. She had the expectation in mind to be healed of a specific affliction. She was healed without him knowing it. And he said to her, verse 34, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. Wonderful story about expectation. So in conclusion here, go to God. Expect that miracle, however that plays out in your life. It will play out if the expectation is held on to, because God is a God of small miracles. And it's often those small miracles that can begin to ignite that greater flame of expectation where faith begins to increase and grow and grow and grow. You know, in the book of John, and I'll close with this, during the Passover, we recognize we're in a covenant relationship with God. This is the Passover season, and a big part of that covenant relationship is that we can go to him and request of him things we do desire. And even Jesus Christ talks about this. Let's go to John chapter 16. It's an amazing statement, but again, this was said during the evening of the Passover. So this is very much a Passover message. Because his involvement in our lives, we definitely can request it. There are contexts and situations where you see people literally demand it. In respect and love, but in humility, demand it. And because we're involved in a covenant relationship, can have the confidence and expectation that it will take place. Verse 23, he's speaking to the disciples before he's about to be taken. And in that day you will ask of me nothing. Most assuredly, I say to you, whatever you ask the Father, in my name, he will give it to you. He just simply says, now you'll be able to go to the Father, because he is your Father now. So this involves Jesus Christ, but it also involves the Father. It is because of what Christ suffered, we can go to the very throne of God with boldness, with a determination, with great expectation that those little miracles will take place. So with wisdom and with determination, request of God that little miracle.